So thank you, and thanks to Yassine for organizing this nice conference. So I'm going to be talking about some joint work with Nick Paulson and Tom Sargent. We're interested in problems of learning and nonlinear filtering. And this isn't econometrics, but in fact, what we have in mind is the following. We have in mind economic agents as econometricians. And so what we really want to do is be able to look ambitiously at economic models in which learning dynamics are very important components to them. And to make learning dynamics important, typically what has to happen is that the learning has to be challenging to them. We need to have the economic agents struggling with what the underlying econometric models are, to the extent to which the models are just approximations or how do they confront approximation errors and the like, how do they confront the statistical challenges. And also, we want to step outside the usual rational expectations environment or even rational learning environment and allow our agents to be skeptical about the model. So when we observe ourselves and actual decision makers thinking of trying to use statistical methods, there's often some type of struggle that goes on with model specification and concerns that the model's not really correctly specified and the like, that standard approaches, rational expectations approaches, put to the side. And when learning is easy, this seems like a perfectly sensible strategy, but once learning becomes challenging, then this we think it's worthwhile to explore alternative approaches, and one that Sargent and I have spent a lot of time on is thinking about models in which there's investors are face some form of ambiguity aversion, concern about model misspecification, or a concern about robustness. And so, you know, in various other places, we've talked about why we think learning dynamics are important. Here's a picture, which I'm not going to be able to tell you exactly how it's constructed. But this is a picture that this is a model in which there is no stochastic volatility in the underlying macroeconomy. It's a model in which investors are struggling with competing model. Investors are struggling with alternative specifications of the macroeconomy. They don't know which one is right. Even given historical data over 50 years, they still really don't really know which one is right. And the struggles and concerns about misspecification and the like give rise to interesting movements in these uncertainty prices. So in the bottom, in this bottom here. These are what we call uncertainty prices. These are the counterpart to risk prices. And in the model we're looking at, even under rational learning, the risk prices would be constant. And the learning dynamics is in giving rise to these interesting spikes in these underlying uncertainty prices. These are now, instead of risk prices, there's a learning component to them. And so we see around the Volcker area, there's a big, a big spike in them, and most recently there's also a big spike in them. And this is all coming from investors struggling with the underlying model of the macroeconomy. We did this analysis in the context of models in which we had quasi-analytical filtering methods at our disposal. Basically, we were looking at multiple models and Kalman filtering style solutions. We really didn't treat very ambitiously issues related to parameter uncertainty and other components of uncertainty. Stochastic volatility was closed down. As a starting point, that's interesting just to see how far we can get without it. But of course, stochastic volatility in the macroeconomy, we can be pretty much convinced these days that it can be an important concern. Macroeconomists in the kind of post-85 period started talking about the Great Moderation, which has, I guess, now come to a close. So before they were thinking about this as some permanent shift, and it's now it looks more like a low frequency movements in volatility. So as I say, previous applications here were limited to ones in which you could build on quasi-analytical filtering methods, such as those of Kalman filtering, Wanham filtering, and the like. And in this work with Nick Paulson, we want to explore ways to take particle filtering methods and to improve them, in ways that make them useful as models that entail some form of agent-based learning. Okay. Now, particle filtering methods, as most of you know, are these numerical Monte Carlo-based techniques, and they're used to approximate Bayesian solutions to filtering and estimation problems, given signal histories. And so we want to take that as a starting point and see how to build, modify, and adapt such methods to the problems that interest us. So in the standard Kalman filtering model, often the underlying parameters are presumed known, or one takes discrete state approximations. We're thinking of this particle filtering as kind of as an interesting or a flexible alternative to such methods. So what improvements do we have in mind? It was basically two ideas, and both have antecedents in the literature. One is you want to use so-called sufficient statistics, because when learning includes some type of invariant parameters. So part of what we want to consider are situations in which there's some subset of parameters in which, at least for the purposes of the exercise, are treated as invariant, as constant. We want to let other ones, of course, fluctuate. Okay, now it's known that these invariant parameters, the existence of these invariant parameters, is what causes particle filtering methods to kind of deteriorate, because there's no kind of replenishing of the particle. There's no kind of stochastic, the absence of stochastic evolution limits the, contributes to the decay in the approximation. So here's what we want to use, sufficient statistics, where sufficient statistics here can depend on things like the hidden states that agents don't observe. So that's why sufficient statistics here are in quotes. We're going to take a very generous interpretation of them. The important thing is that they have recursive representations, and they're going to allow us the ability in terms of the actual algorithms to have randomization of the parameters over the course of the algorithm. So we can actually take random draws from distributions. This is going to help to get rid of one of the defects of particle filtering methods. These type of ideas have been applied previously in a work by Paulson and Johannes. But as I say, sufficient statistics here, really the way that they're in quotes, because the way that we apply them, they can depend on hidden states and subsets of parameters and the like. The other thing that's important to us is the following. A standard statistician's approach to these filtering problems often concentrates attention towards the center of the distribution. That's where most of the action is from the standpoint of characterizing posteriors and the like. But for decision problems, what you really care about are things like tails potentially, but not all tails, just some tails. You care about aspects of the distribution that kind of cause the investor most concern. Like in this literature on model misspecification, ambiguity, and the like, what investors do is they kind of search through possible misspecifications, and they kind of figure out places in which the consequences to utility are largest. Okay, so the other thing which we want to be doing is using the details of the decision problem to redirect the numerical approximation to kind of areas in which there's the investor really cares about, and this pushes it away often from the center of the distribution to tails, but not all tails, the tails that are most germane. So in my limited time, let me just set up just remind you of the basic type of hidden state Markov chain setup. We're going to imagine YT here is a vector of current period signals. In economic models, there's typically observable and unobservable state components to the state vector. And so we're going to allow ZT to be unobserved. We're going to introduce a parameter theta that is going to be there's going to be a parameter theta, which is also going to be unknown. So the decision maker is not going to know ZT. The decision maker is not going to know theta. But there's going to be a specification of how Z evolves conditioned here on the current period signal, the previous period state, and the parameter vector theta. Theta is this unknown parameter, and then in standard Bayesian decision theory, we assign this some prior. Similarly, there's some signal evolution that tells us how the signal evolves conditioned on that tomorrow's signal evolves based on today's current state and today's parameter vector. Now, the usual usual form of filtering does what? It takes this hidden state process and it replaces a hidden state by the posterior distribution over the hidden state. And then what recursive filtering is all about is ways to characterize conveniently posterior densities or posterior distributions over that hidden state. And so at the end of the day, you produce this recursive representation of the, think of QT here as the density now, not only, only over the hidden state, but the parameter vector theta. And so we can just produce an equation here from Bayes' rule that tells us feed in the date t distribution over states and invariant parameter vector. Look at the signals that come in, condition on those, and then produce a new distribution over next period state and the parameter vector theta. So basically, we're replacing Zt and theta by a density Qt. And then decision makers kind of use Qt in place of the original Zt and theta. So all filtering methods are all about is trying to get convenient ways to approximate this evolution equation here. Now, as I say, which for numerical approximation, it's kind of handy to have an ability to let the, from the standpoint of simulation, be able to let the thetas move around. And so you don't have particles that kind of just keep, you know, that kind of hold fixed the theta across different generations of time. So it's sufficient statistics typically have recursive representations for conveniently, you know, so-called conjugate prior families of say distributions. And so when the parameter vectors had nice sufficient statistics, then typically we can construct them recursively from last period sufficient statistic. Now, notice here I am including the hidden states. So sufficient statistics here are with respect to the hidden states, not just the observed states here. And for flexibility, I'm putting in a theta here, which I'll talk more about in just a second. In general, in the usual sufficient statistics story, y's and z's and x's would be observed if there'd be no theta here. But then once I've got the sufficient statistic, then I can draw the distribution of theta conditioned on the sufficient statistic. And this now gives me the ability in terms of the simulation, given these particles are already tracking the hidden states, I'm allowed to do the sufficient statistics condition on the hidden states. And that gives me a way to add in some extra randomization into the numerical algorithms. Okay, now I put a theta here because sometimes there may not exist nice sufficient statistics, and the usual application of particle filtering, the count, the ST is just equal to theta. Now, one could imagine that for all the parameter vectors, you can produce these sufficient statistics. That's this case two here. But there's also applications in which you could imagine forming sufficient statistics for some set of parameters conditioned on other ones. And so you can at least help improve the calculations along some dimensions. And so that's why we're giving ourselves this flexibility in terms of dependence upon theta as well. The key thing is this map for S is recursive. So now we're going to produce this kind of new Markov law. We're going to form a new Markov process in which the parameters are actually evolving. It's going to be a different Markov process, but the key is going to be it's going to have the same filtering solution. So the whole trick is to produce a new Markov process with thetas evolving over time, but the filtering solution that interests us remains the same. So now we're going to imagine this theta t. We're going to imagine drawing this. We're going to imagine, according to the sufficient statistic calculation, draw the next period signal, draw the next period's hidden state, and then produce the new, from these calculations, construct the new sufficient statistic. Okay? And so this is a nice recursive way to proceed. The thetas now are evolving. The corresponding algorithm just repeats all these same steps. These are just the particle filter way of implementing those steps in the previous slide here. So you kind of, and the trick here is now you feed in this algorithm. Of course, what you want to be doing now is conditioning on the actual data. So the y's here are inputted data. The d here are the observable state vectors. The z's are the simulated values of the hidden states, and the thetas are the simulated values of the parameters now. And so this algorithm is just implementing the construction given on the previous slide. Now, to proceed, it's, you know, when possible, it's nice to do you can improve numerical calculations by doing at least some partial smoothing when possible. This is just says instead of the original state vector, imagine I construct a state vector yt and the lag value of, say, xt minus 1. And then compute distributions conditioned on this state variable instead of the previous one, and that can lead to some improvements when this is possible. So if I just apply this just in the context of a simple stochastic growth model that's pretty much like a Kalman filtering problem with unknown parameters, you can kind of generate out now from histories of data, you can generate out the behavior of key coefficients like the alpha and the Cobb-Douglas production function, beta is a subjective rate of discount, rho is some autoregressive parameter. This is then generated from actual data. Here are the type of histograms you get at the end of the sample, but you know, we want more than a calculation at the end of the sample. We want the entire time series in order to understand the dynamics of learning. And so for this particular example, this is kind of how these posterior distributions are behaving. You know, you start off with these not very informative priors, and then you kind of slowly or you gradually hone in on the different parameters here. The red is the medians, and then we got the 0.05 and 0.95 quantiles. This is kind of illustrates the dynamics of learning for these parameter vectors coming out of such an algorithm. So far, we haven't talked about this issue, though, about what portions of the distribution do you really care about. And that's what I want to turn to in my remaining couple minutes. So there's a whole literature on so-called long-run risk models. In fact, these are models in which, roughly speaking, you endow investors with very subtle information about the dynamics, and then you expect and then the econometrician lets the asset prices reveal the information about those dynamics in the macroeconomy. So these dynamics might be subtle aspects of the growth rate. They might be subtle aspects of the stochastic volatility and the like. The usual fiction in that literature is agents kind of know that stuff. The econometrician doesn't. The econometrician can kind of figure it out by looking at asset prices simultaneously with the macro data. The primitive knowledge in the macro economy, though, is very, very weak. So we want to take a different attack on that. We want to imagine that instead of our investors having all this confidence in these components to volatility, to growth and the like, we're going to give them skepticism. And that's what underlied the previous, the first plot which I gave you. And so that was one in which there was no stochastic volatility. So this is just a simple example in which I've now added in some type of Gaussian scales that are shifting around volatility, just as illustrations. Right. So now to proceed with this, to have our investors really explore this model from the vantage point of skepticism and concerns about robustness and the like, the decision maker goes and looks at the specification and tries to figure out where the misspecifications have the biggest utility consequences. And so the remaining aspect of this, the second trick to this paper is to kind of use that decision problem to figure out push towards other portions of the distribution, which ends up being tails. So roughly speaking, you're going through and computing continuation values from these kind of concerns about robustness. And these give rise to distorted distributions that have implications for equilibrium prices. I should point out that the idea of using the decision problem to help to repose the filtering problem is something which is shown up previously in Thurn, Langford, and Verma. And the idea of kind of using the idea of trying to simulate elsewhere in tails shows up critically and shows up in a central way in literatures like by Bucklow and others using large deviation theory. And the stuff we're doing has ties to both of these. What we're able to do is to use some methods that Schenkman and I developed in an econometrica paper to produce an alternative evolution equation, Markov evolution equation. We can simulate under that, and that's going to produce distorted densities that are central in terms of doing the pricing calculations. So, these are just plots of the type of densities that comes out of this robustness analysis. So if you're moderately concerned, you might have some state variable density that looks like this, and the concern about misspecification leads you to shift this way. And as you crank up the concerns about model misspecification, there can be a big mismatch between the original density and this alternative density. So it seems kind of crazy to be focusing all your attention on this density, where the tails get very thin here, when in fact it's stuff over here which you really are going to start caring about. And so that's why we want to use the decision problem to shift us from this region over to this region. So I think I'm essentially out of time here. This is just list some of the mechanics of this. Basically, we're able to produce characterizations of ways to simulate alternative Markov processes that get us this alternative distribution, and comparing the two then gives us implications for pricing. So with that, we're exploring modifications to particle filtering. We think that these are critical for studying learning dynamics and economic models. There's two refinements of this that we find valuable. One is this use of so-called sufficient statistics. The other is to use the decision problem of the investors to direct the numerical approximation. Stop. Right on time.